This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome back to The Morning Run. You're here with Lynn, Roshan and Noel. 7:18 a.m. Tuesday, the 11th of August. And in about half an hour, we're going to be speaking with Dr. Bridget Welsh of the University of Nottingham's Asia Research Institute on Lim Guan Eng's corruption charges. Now, we're also running a poll on the subject on the BFM Twitter account, at BFM Radio, asking you, how do you think the corruption charges against Lim Guan Eng will affect Pakatan Harapan? Will they strengthen PH, weaken PH? Maybe there's no change, or are you not sure about the subject?
Well, 15 minutes in, it looks like 45% have voted that it will strengthen the party, the coalition. 16% say I think it will weaken Pakatan Harapan. 26% say it think it will. There will be no change, and 12% are not sure.
Interesting results.
So do continue to let us know what you think. We've had about 80 votes so far. Still an hour and a half left to weigh in. But right now we're taking a look at Malaysia's rice industry, because last week the government informed Parliament that Padi Beras Nasional Berhad, or BERNAS, will remain as the single gatekeeper for rice imports for an undetermined duration.
This was announced by Agriculture and Food Industry Minister Dato Sri Dr. Ronald Kian D. He said that the government is currently in the midst of finalising the terms and conditions of this extension agreements. And as we know, the local rice industry has been solely managed by BERNAS for the past 40 years. That's quite long, right? And so, you know, I would think there should be some open tender of some sort, you know, to you know, at least review this again. But I guess the current government is wanting to preserve the status quo.
So for a primer on what BERNAS was meant to achieve and how it could be reformed, we speak this morning to Professor Datin Paduka Fatimah Mohamed Arshad, Research Fellow at the Institute of Agricultural and Food Policy Studies of UPM, as well as the co-author of a report with ideas. So that was titled Effectiveness of State Trading Enterprises in Achieving Food Security, which uses BERNAS as a case study. Professor Fatima, thank you so much for joining us this morning. So let's start with the basic premise of BERNAS. You know, what was the purpose of setting it up, and has it effectively achieved its objective?
Thank you. Good morning. The objective of BERNAS, mainly, number one, is to ensure stable price of rice to producers and consumers. And number two, to ensure sufficient rice to the population, plus some other social obligations. Looking at the past records, we can see that the price is stable, and this is largely due to the government policy of fixing the price to protect producers and consumers from the instabilities in the world market. And BERNAS was assigned to administer and actualize this policy through functions such as GMP, or guaranteed minimum price of paddy implementation, as well as ensuring price ceiling is adhered to. In terms of sufficient supply, the record shows that Malaysia has relatively enjoyed a stable supply of rice, with the exception of certain crisis years, such as in 2008 and 1972. This is because of the government's close monitoring of the self-sufficiency level targets from year to year, by monitoring tightly the production and import every year, and of course BERNAS contribution in terms of stockpile management. So in other words, the complementarity roles between the government protectionist policy and administrative support of BERNAS have ensured the two objectives are realised.
This report with ideas argues that the existence of a monopoly importer, in this case BERNAS, limits innovation and the creation of more SMEs, basically more businesses, amongst other inefficiencies. But realistically, how many rice importers apart from BERNAS can the rice market support?
At the moment, BERNAS is a total sole importer, right? And I think they have shared their APs with a number of importers. But if you open it up, I think quite a number of importers will be interested. And I guess the number is limited by regulation made by the government, or for example, in terms of their financial capacity and their ability to manage the stockpile of rice.
So would you say maybe two or three importers, two or three BERNAS type of companies?
Probably at the moment, yeah. But I don't have good ideas on the number, but it's quite difficult to compete with BERNAS, because BERNAS has been there for 40 years and they are quite professional in managing import, in managing stockpile and so on. So the new competitors have to compete with BERNAS with a more efficient as well as ability to handle stockpile management.
Now, in the report, it was stated that it's understandable why policymakers may opt to remain the status quo despite the drawbacks of having Bernas around. Why would it be difficult to institute reforms? What are some of the hurdles here?
I think the government opted for extension of Bernas. Of course, they have their own reasons, right? But I think basically it's because there is no proper conceptualization of the workable alternative model. You know, because it's not easy. So an abrupt change can be costly and also destabilizing. And I think the recent change in the government has also contributed to the discontinuity of market reform efforts. And plus, don't forget that the system is deeply entrenched, you know. So to uproot Bernas or to undo some of its functions could be a very formidable task. It requires proper planning and, you know, very detailed planning to ensure a smooth transition.
So, Professor Fatima, you know, what measures would you advocate to reform Bernas, both in the short, medium, as well as in the longer term?
I think we have about 50 years, yes, since Bernas in 1971, 15 years of hard evidence of the economic inefficiencies as well as economic and social hazards of a highly protected industry and monopolized import. You already have mentioned just now the missed opportunities of not having a relatively open market, such as you know, value-added growth, SME development, and so on. Since the structure will not change very much, I would expect, or one would expect, that the impact or outcome will remain the same, if not worse, right? So for the sake of this industry, I would suggest that we should plan from now to create a very competitive, as well as equitable and sustainable paddy and rice industry for the sake of the majority of players in the industry, as well as public. And also program to empower farmers, because farmers have been under subsidy regime and protectionist regime for almost 50 years that they don't decide for themselves. The subsidy dictates their decision and prices are determined by the government. So it's about time that we liberate them a bit so that they can decide for themselves what's best for themselves in terms of paddy farming and other ventures. We empower them through technology extension and, you know, improving their cooperative institutions so that they can work as a cooperative and involve in value-added activities through small machines or small mills so that they can earn some extra income. You know, at the moment, they can't because downstream is controlled by big mills and burners and wholesalers, and upstream, particularly the fertilizer industry, is centralized by one institution, so they are trapped in the middle. They have nowhere to go except paddy farming. They can't go for value-added activities. They can't go for agribusiness or input business because it is in the hand of somebody else. So we must give them more opportunities to venture value-added as well as you know, farm diversification or selling their special rice that they produce or whatever rice that they have planted, which they think suitable for the consumers. And also, we should also encourage sustainable as well as precision farming so that the industry is ecologically sustainable in the long term. Thank you.
Thank you so much for speaking with us this morning, Professor Fatima. That was Professor Datin Paduka Fatima Mohamed Arshad, Research Fellow at the Institute of Agricultural and Food Studies of UPM. And I think the situation that she described, the farmers are caught between a rock and a hard place, right? Because in the downstream, you've got Bernas and you've got the large mills. In the upstream, you've got a fertilizer industry that's also controlled by single players. It's a bit of a difficult situation for them. And it's a situation that they've faced for several decades already. How do they break out of it?
Yeah, actually, we've had a few conversations on the Morning Run over the last year or two, actually. So if you just go to the BFM app and just search for Bernas, you will find two conversations there. One with a former Agriculture Minister, Dato Salahuddin Ayub, who really touched on this and really gave us a bit of background into Bernas at that point. And we also spoke to the Majlis Tindakan Ekonomi Melayu Bersatu on the dilemma that the Malay Rice Millers Association had brought up. This was about last year. Both these conversations will give you a little bit more of context into the Bernas situation, a bit more understanding, I think.
Yes, so we're going to be taking a look at more stories in just a bit. But right now we have the 7:30 news bulletin coming up for you. And then up next, the situation in Beirut with James Dorsey of the S. Rajaratnam School of International Studies. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.